We'll see how we can remove the degeneracy from the system so that it becomes a not degenerate problem, and then we can analyze our results the way we did for the non-degenerate perturbation theory. In the end, we are going to revisit the popular ball into bin problems. I'm sure you might have seen them in some of the mathematical courses where you try to find out the permutations or combinations of how you arrange different color balls in bins. That's something would be part of your tutorial tomorrow. So I want to cover it today. And this is related to the next topic, which would be the quantum statistical mechanics, which we are going to cover on Friday. Okay. So yesterday, we had to stop. We had calculated the first order correction in energy, and we kind of calculated the second order correction in energy. And I said that second order correction in energy is simply another expectation value. And this time the expectation value is for the unperturbed state and the first order perturbation in the state. And this is a generalized formula. So if you want to find the ith order correction to energy, all you need to do is find out this integral. And obviously you need these. So you need a one order less in your wave function, the correction in your wave function order less, if you want to calculate the ith order correction in your energy. So yesterday we couldn't find this correction, and I'm going to quickly go over this so that we can do the interesting part of analyzing the results, okay? So I'm going to use the I'll reshare. Somehow I couldn't fix the problem of floating numbers and images in my OneNote. I couldn't do that. So this is my first order correction equation. So remember, we had organized all our equations order by order. This was the first order correction in lambdas. And I can rewrite it as what I'm going to assume here is that my psi n1, which is the first order correction in my wave function, I can express it as a linear combination of my unperturbed states. So these are all unperturbed states, which I know the solutions for. And this is a linear combination of all these states. And note, I'm excluding the state n from this summation, because remember, yesterday we had shown that I could write my perturbed wave function as a linear combination of states other than m equal to n. If you remember, we had introduced an operator of kind phi, if you remember that, I can show you. But we had introduced an operator, which was the complementary operator phi, complementary projection operator phi n, which included all the states except for n. So that's the reason we are not including this M, because it's going to give us divergent results. That's what we concluded yesterday. So I'm going to use this psi in my Schrodinger equation, and what you're going to notice from here is, since the psi m naughts are the eigenvectors for my Hamiltonian, I would get on the left-hand side of the equation. So when these act on my eigenvectors, they give me eigenvalues, and I can get a relation like this. Okay. Now, again, using the trick, since what I need from my equation right now are these coefficients, because if I know these coefficients, I know my wave first order corrections inside. So since I need these, I'm going to again use the trick of inner product, because this is just a number. I can just divide it, divide the entire equation by these numbers. But I cannot get rid of this unless I take an inner product with psi and L. And if I take inner product with this, I would get something like,
Lapin, yeah, I've got a question.
Yeah.
The H, the Hamiltonians on the right side, is that H1? Are those ones each H1?
Ah, yeah, I should write them as V. Yeah, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. So maybe I should use them as V. Thank you so much. Because we were using V's yesterday instead of H. So yeah, that makes more sense. And you can write it as I L V. I can write these as the delta functions because they are on the unperturbed, which is my basis set. These as delta Ln. Now, there are two cases depending on what values my L is going to take. So if L is equal to N, that would mean this is 1. If L is equal to N, it would mean that L can never be equal to M, because we have a constraint that M's are never equal to N. This vector is going to go away, and my equation is going to reduce into the first order perturbation correction for energy, which we did yesterday. So we didn't gain anything new. But for a second case of kind, when L is not equal to N, then there's a possibility that L is equal to M. And in that case, the specter here goes away, and my equation reduces to something of this sort. So since L is equal to M, in this summation, I have only one term which survives. Rest all terms, they are zero. And I can write my equation as And from here, I can find out my C coefficients, which I need to calculate the first order correction in wave functions. I'm going to get rid of this negative sign and invert my signs for the E's. Yeah. And if I substitute that back into my definition for psi n ones, I can just simplify. I can write my CMNs from here, and my first order correction in wave functions simply becomes a relation like this. Okay, I'm sure you're familiar with this equation. You have seen it a number of times before. What I'm most interested in is now analyzing our results for all the three perturbation equations which we got, the first order energy correction, second order energy correction, and the first order correction in our wave function. So I have them written somewhere here on a page. Yeah. Okay. So this is the summary. Like, we found out the first order correction in energy. We found out the second order correction in energy and first order correction in our wave functions. What I want you to tell me is, like, this is pretty straightforward, right? This is just an indicator, because we know these, we know this. It's just a simple matrix element which you can calculate by standard integration processes. What do you infer by this equation here? Like, what do these matrices you think would mean?
The potential exciting one of your like states in the unperturbed system to another state?
Yes, so it's kind of mixing. So when I have, yeah, that's a perfect answer. So when I have applied a perturbation, what it does is it tries to mix different states, I would say. So these states are called intermediate states. And the system doesn't remain in these intermediate states permanently. So it goes to an intermediate state K and it falls back into the initial state N, because my system has to remain in N. Time independent perturbations, they cannot cause excitations. So they cannot permanently stay in N. They have to fall back to their initial N state. So you can say that these, in the, each of these summations, you can say it's a product of first order transitions, right? So that's why it's a second order energy correction. This is my total energy if I calculate. So this is my first order correction, zeroth order correction in energy, first order correction in energy, second order, and so on. And I can continue to calculate it to higher orders. These are my perturbed wave functions. Now, can you give me a picture of what these, I mean, this equation also gives me exactly the same picture which this second order energy correction gave me. This also says that once I have applied perturbation, my perturbed state is no longer just a knot. It is actually a combination of all the other states. So I kind of had a mixing in my system now. So the same equation is giving me the same physical interpretation for the perturbation applied. Coming back to this formula here, the second order energy formula, I really like it, because when I work with atomic systems, I mostly work with neutral atomic systems for which the first order correction is zero. They don't have any first order corrections which signify a permanent dipole moment. So neutral systems, they don't have any permanent dipole moments. But mostly, atomic physicists are interested in the second order and the higher order corrections to the energy. So if you look at this expression, and I say that, let us say I'm trying to calculate the second order correction in energy for my ground state. Okay, so N is the ground state, which is the lowest state for my atomic system. If my ground state unput up energy is somewhere here, looking at this expression, can you tell me if I apply a perturbation, this state should shift a little higher to my original unput up state or a little lower to the unput up state? So is the question clear?
Can you repeat it one more time?
Okay. So this is the second order correction in energy for any state. So I could calculate the correction to my ground state or first excited or higher excited states. So let us say I want to calculate this correction for ground state of my system. So ground state is the lowest energy state. It has the minimum energy. Looking at this expression here, can you tell me that if En naught is the unperturbed energy, now if I apply some kind of perturbation to my system, the perturbed energies would be a little higher to the original unperturbed energies, a little lower to the unperturbed energies?
Isn't lower because of sine is...
Lower.
Yeah.
Sine minus.
And exactly. So this is always true for all the systems. The correction energy corrections in my lowest ground state should always give me energy little less than the original unperturbed energy. And what's more interesting is, let's say if I had a two-level system, this was ith system and this was the jth system. This was the ith state of my system and this was the jth state of my system. And if I calculate these second order corrections for ith state, since for the ith state in denominator, I have ei minus ej naughts. And for the jth state in my denominator, I have ej naughts minus ei naughts. There's always a sign difference between these shifts in energy for my ith and jth states. They'll never cross. Such phenomena is called anti-crossing, and I hope you might have come across this word somewhere.
Sorry, quick question. Think that the second order energy correction has to be negative if we're considering a perturbation to the ground state, but the first order correction may be bigger than that negative value, so I don't understand why the total new perturbed energy necessarily has to decrease. Like the VNN could potentially be larger than the second order correction term, which is negative.
But for neutral systems, as I said, this is going to be zero always. The neutral systems, they don't have any permanent. So this matrix element here, or this integral, it signifies a permanent dipole moment. And if you have a neutral system, there's no permanent dipole moment for that system. So in that case, if this is zero, the first dominant energy correction to the system would be the second order energy correction, which has to be always lower than the original perturbed state. Does that satisfy you?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Adding to the question, what about the higher order terms? Could they be possibly positive?
For higher order terms, like for the third order, we have terms like squares of these energies. So there's a possibility that you have either positive or negative, depending on what signs these integrals are going to give you. Okay. And we are going to do some tutorial problems on higher order energy correction. So maybe it will be more intuitive when you solve those formulas. But yeah, they can be positive or negative, both.
Sorry, I have a question.
continuing Mary's question. So so anti-crossing is only for neutral neutral system, like where the first order fraction is zero, right?
I think it should be for other systems like ionic species as well, because the second order correction, which gives you the anti-crossing, because see, this expression here cannot give you any kind of anti-crossing. It's just I lost my connection. I'm sorry for the pause. So I'll come back to the question. And we cannot get anti-crossings from this term here. This is just a number. This is just a movement of the system, if I'm talking about atomic systems. For ionic systems, which are like not neutral, you will have the same expression here. So when you draw these maps for these second order corrections in energy, even for non-neutral systems, you'll get anti-crossings. That's what my understanding says. Does that answer your question?
So like the first order is just the first order correction is just a constant shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a constant shift. This is a constant shift as well, but that's a good question. I mean, you're asking so many advanced level questions. What we normally do is we try to express this E in terms of, we normally, what we try to do when I'm talking about this, a permanent dipole moment, it's for a special kind of V, which is the interaction with the electromagnetic field. For other systems, it might be a different picture. And depending on the, so this has, usually this has form of this kind, Q dot E, which is the electric charge and the electric field of the system. And so, again, what I'm talking about is a very specific example. It may vary from different perturbations to different perturbations. And if I include a perturbation of this kind, of course, this is going to give me a number, but it's going to vary with an electric field, but there are going to be no anti-crossings for it. There's no energy denominator for this expression here. Anti-crossings always occur when you have some kind of energy denominators, which give you opposite signs. And if I draw this as an function of electric field, I'll just get linear graphs because this is proportional to E. But in this case, I would get something very interesting, and I wish I had some kind of graph. But if a field of this kind and the other is going to be repelled, like they're going to be in opposite directions because of the energy denominator here. For one of the states, this energy denominator is going to be positive, and for the other, it's going to be negative.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think...
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Just a quick question. So we have level splitting only when the higher order energy corrections are involved, is it so?
This is not splitting. So we are going to talk about splitting when we do degenerate systems. This is just shifting in our energy levels. There are no splits.
Okay.
Yeah. You probably are getting confused with the degenerate case, where when we apply a perturbation, the degeneracy, it's removed and you get splitting in your energy levels.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So I think I've covered the part I wanted to discuss for the first order, second order, and third order. Sorry, first order corrections and wave function, and analyzing these results. Are there any more discussions before we move on to the degenerate perturbation theory? Okay, great. Now, the perturbation method which we developed just now, it fails when we talk about degenerate systems. And the obvious reason, mathematically, you could see that our questions here. Yeah. So these equations which we just wrote down, especially for the second order correction in energies and my first order corrections in wave functions, if I have degenerate system, these energy denominators are going to blow up. And since these energy denominators are going to blow up for these corrections, I don't find a reason why I should also trust the first order correction in energy formula for here. Okay, so we need to obviously or maybe formulate another method to handle degeneracy in our system. Let's say we have a two-fold degenerate system of this kind. There are two states, psi A naughts and psi B naughts, and they are degenerate, which means that they satisfy the same eigenvalue equation. So this is by degenerate, this is by definition for our two-fold degenerate system. Okay. Now, for if you remember, for our non-degenerate case, we had found out that my perturbed state was psi n naught and some orders of lambdas, right? And then we said that if I switch off my perturbation, this term approaches to zero and my perturbed state should approach to psi n naught. But for a degenerate case, what would happen is that when I try to switch off my perturbation, since the system is degenerate, it won't know which state to go into, right? There are two possibilities for it to go. Rather, I would say many possibilities, because if psi A and psi B, they are the solutions for my eigenvalue equations, any linear combination of psi A and psi B is also a good solution to this Schrodinger equation. So when I switch off my perturbation, the system is going to get confused and it won't know which combination of psi A's and psi B it should go into, right? What we are going to try to do is, we are going to try to find a combination or a good combination of my psi A and psi B's such that when I switch off the perturbation, the system knows that it has to go into that combination. And that combination would be called as the correct combination, correct, or you can say good combination of my eigengets. So I'm just repeating the problem. See, for non-degenerate system, there was no problem. When I switched off my perturbation, the system directly knew that it has to resemble the unperturbed state. But for a degenerate case, since I have a lot of possibilities of this kind as well, so the system won't know which combination of psi A and psi B it should go to when the perturbation is switched off. I need to find these alphas and betas, or the correct combination of my states where the system should go when the perturbation is switched off. And what is the criteria for finding out this correct combination of eigenkets? If I go back to my expression of this kind, remember our first order wave function correction and our second order energy correction had terms like these in their expression. So if I look at this expression, the problem with this expression is that when n approaches k in that limit, this expression has a singularity. The denominator, it goes to zero, it has a singularity. And I can get rid of this singularity if my numerator is also zero. In that case, I have a form like 0 by 0, which might be handled by standard methods like L'Hopital rulers. I'm sure there might be other methods as well. But my problem that this expression here is singular in this limit, I can solve it if I make my numerator 0 as well. So the correct combinations of eigenkets would be such eigenkets where I'll write the correct combinations of eigenkets as C's, where my off-diagonal terms for V, they become 0. So these are the off-diagonal terms for my potential V. Okay, so this is my criteria. This is going to help me find the correct combinations of my eigenkets. Okay, is that point clear to you all? Like what we are trying to do, how we are trying to solve this problem. I have to stop sharing again and again. So we are going to try to find this good combinations for C first, and then maybe try to generalize n-fold degenerate, okay? Two-fold degenerate case. And remember, our aim here is to find the correct combinations for these psi n's, where the off-diagonal terms for my perturbation, they are 0. I just need diagonal terms, that's all. Are two-fold degenerate states which satisfy this eigenvalue equation. Okay. And since they are unperturbed states, I would assume that they form a good basis set. They are orthogonal and they are normalized, okay? This equation, which I'm interested in, is of this kind where I need to solve, I need these sizes, where H is, and E's can be written as, again, the same thing which we did for the non-degenerate systems as orders of perturbations. Now, if I substitute these values for H, E's, and size, I'll again get those, I'll equate the coefficients for lambdas, I'll get those corrections, where corrections in my lambdas. And this is what we remember got for the first order correction in my lambdas. Now, for our non-degenerate system, we wanted to find these E1s, and we took an inner product of the entire equation with psi naughts. But in this case, psi naught is not a good combination, I can't do that. What I'm going to do instead is I'm going to first take an inner product with psi a's and then with the psi b's. Okay? I'll get two kind of equations. So for a n-fold degeneracy, I'm going to take this inner product for all my m degenerate states. Okay, so since we have two-fold degeneracy here, I'm going to get two equations from the inner product with psi a's and psi b's. Okay. So if I take inner product of this equation with psi a's, now, if you look at this equation, my term here is canceling out with this term here. It's the same thing which we did for the non-degenerate case, and we are left out with these two terms. And what next I'm going to do is I'm going to write the linear write my psi naught as a linear combination of psi naught phase. Okay, so I'll get an equation of this kind. I'll get alpha b But I guess you can do the intermediate steps. You're a very smart class.
Sorry.
So this is what I'm going to, yep.
Wasn't the linear combination for psi, psi is equal to alpha psi a plus beta psi b? So if you took out, oh, okay, I understood this. I understood what I wanted to say.
Okay. Okay, great. So this is one of the possible equations I'm going to get with an inner product with size. And I'm going to use a short form here and equation alpha E prime, E1 is equal to alpha WAA. So I'm going to call this as WAA. Am I audible to all? I see that my internet is not stable. Okay. And I'll get a similar looking equation if I take an inner product with psi b's, okay? I'm a little fast with these things because I know most of you have already done that. Okay? But if you feel I need to slow down and do all the steps, just need to ask. Is that fine?
Sorry, do you mean beta E1?
Yep. Okay. And beta E1. If you look at this equation, it's a, say, system of equations which you can write in matrix form. I can write this as WAA, WAB, WBA, and WBBs. And alpha and betas, E1, and alpha. Okay. What I want now, as I said, I want such values or such linear combination for alpha and betas such that these diagonal terms, they don't appear. And I only have diagonal matrix matrices for this matrix here. Okay, so I need to diagonalize this matrix. In other words, I just need to solve this eigenvalue equation and eigenvalue matrix form, diagonalize this matrix here. I'll get two solutions for this diagonal matrix elements. So E1, I'll call E1 plus and E1 minus. And once I have these diagonalized matrix, I can find out the corresponding eigenfunctions or alpha betas, which I'm going to call as the good linear combination, which are no more degenerate. Like I'll get a linear combination. So this is one of the possible solutions for my equation here. And this is the second possible solution for these, this equation here, right? And these are called the eigenvalues. And corresponding to these, each of these eigenvalues, I'll get alphas and betas. Maybe I can write plus and minus here. And these alpha and betas are going to give me the correct linear combination of my psi naught, which you see is no more degenerate. So I have psi the unperturbed state, now linear combination of these psi b's, and they have a distinct energy. So what we have done here is we have kind of removed the degeneracy from our system. Does this make sense to you, or do you need more discussion on this? I cannot see you all. Yeah, hi. Does this make any sense to you all?
Yeah.
I'll just summarize what we did. Yeah, we just found out a good combination of my state.
Excuse me. Oh yeah, your screen wasn't visible for a while.
Yeah, I just stopped sharing. I've reshared it.
Okay.
Now is it visible?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So what we have kind of done is we have eigenvalues. For the corresponding eigenvalues, we found the corresponding eigenfunctions. And those eigenfunctions are actually our good combinations of the unperturbed state. And each of these combinations have a distinct energy. So there's no more degeneracy in our system. Okay. What now I can do is, so these correct combinations, which I have just found out, I can use them. So since they are no more degenerate, they have distinct energies. I have reduced my degenerate problem. I can calculate all the energy corrections, higher order energy corrections, and so on, using the standard formula which we might have used for the problem. Okay, now life becomes simpler. I'm going to write a more general form of this equation. If I had n-fold degeneracy, let's say the system would have looked something like this.
Sorry, there's a bit of a jitter in your voice. It just goes on and off.
Yeah. Is it better now? I have connected to a different Wi-Fi system. My internet is not stable today. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is it better now?
Yeah.
Okay. So for a M for degenerate system, my equation would look something like this. And then I'll have these C coefficients here, which I want to find out, alphas and betas, which I'm now going to write in a more general way, general form. And so on. So these are nothing but our alphas and betas from our previous problem. And this is my first order correction in energy. And again, these C coefficients here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to solve the characteristic equation. This eigenvalue problem diagonalizes. Once I've diagonalized it, I'm going to find out the corresponding eigenfunctions, which are my good linear combinations. Now, what could happen is that I could have, let's say, a system where I applied a perturbation, but applying a first order correction in my perturbation did not break the degeneracy. Okay, this might could have happened, and this is one of the problems in your tutorials. So if I apply a perturbation and try to find out this first order correction in energy, there is a chance that when I solve this eigenvalue problem, the roots are same, or some roots are same. So I have either degeneracy is not lifted, like the system is still degenerate, either degeneracy is not lifted, or I could say that my system is still partially degenerate, okay? In that case, I could again not use the eigenvalues which I have obtained by solving this equation to calculate higher order energy shifts, because my system still has some degeneracy left. In that case, I would have to calculate the next order correction in my energy. And there's a high probability that when I'm calculating the next order correction in my energy or wave functions, the degeneracy is completely gone. And I have the required eigenfunctions which I can use to calculate more higher corrections to the energy just by applying the non-degenerate formulas. Is this point clear?
Sorry, could you explain a bit more in the in the degeneracy 2 case? So you do your eigenvalue.
Okay.
Yeah, you do your eigenvalue equation on the degenerate subspace, and you get your E1 plus and your E1 minus. But depending on the potential, if those things are the same, what do you do then? Because you can't really move to a smaller subspace, so you still have the same level of degeneracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I understand your question correctly. So there's a possibility, like for the previous example, when I'm trying to diagonalize this equation, there's a possibility that I get the same roots. So when I diagonalize it, my two roots for this equation, they are same. In that case, so that would mean that the first order energy correction is same for both the states and the system is still degenerate. So I'll have to calculate the second order correction in energies and see if after finding the second order corrections in energy, the size which I get, if they are representing distinct energy states or not. If they are, then I have changed my degenerate problem into non-degenerate. If still including my second order energy correction, it does not give me distinct roots for my eigenvalue equation, then I will have to include higher and higher corrections to the energy. Is that was your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Is there a physical system in which it is infinitely degenerate?
Infinitely degenerate.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting question. Infinitely degenerate system. Like, you keep on applying corrections to your energy, and you don't get... I don't think so. I cannot think of an example of that, but that's an interesting thing to look upon. Yeah, maybe I can try to answer it tomorrow, which I'm pretty sure I would get null results for. I have never seen any systems which will be infinitely degenerate, because that would mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yep, that's a really interesting question, although.
Okay. Wouldn't that be possible if we like add a perturbation that respects some of the symmetries of the like the first Hamiltonian? Like if the eighth one we are adding has still some symmetries, I don't understand how will we be able to like break that symmetry?
I am not. Can you explain your question a little more? Like, are you trying to answer the previous question?
Yes, because I had like a similar question, because I thought that the reason why we break the degeneracy is related with the fact that we are adding a perturbation that may like break the symmetry that caused the degeneracy. But my question is, if the perturbation we are adding has still some symmetries, how we will be able to break those?
Yeah, so this I think it's exactly the same question as the previous one, right? Is that right? Is this almost the same question which was related to infinite? Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe I have to look up into this and then get back to you by tomorrow. Does that work?
Okay, yes, sorry. Because I didn't understand they were like exactly the same when I did the question. Sorry if that was wrong.
Okay. So I have never come across such kind of system, but that's definitely an interesting one if we can find an infinitely degenerate system. Like, you keep on applying these higher order corrections to the energy and see where these symmetries, they break, something of that sort. So I think I have to dig up a little more literature and then answer your question. Yeah, I don't want to answer something which I don't know. All right. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to draw a comparative picture for degenerate and a non-degenerate system, which might help you solve numerical problems. Okay. So degenerate system, I think I had written it somewhere in a few notes. And let me make sure I didn't miss any point which I needed to discuss. Okay. Yeah, good. So, non-degenerate system. And degenerate. And there's a lot of similarities between degenerate and non-degenerate system when it comes to problem solving. Like, for example, for our non-degenerate system, our, as I said, correction in energies are like this. For degenerate system, we don't get a single equation because we need to solve an eigenvalue equation, and we get for m fold degeneracy, we get m such kind of equations. So this here, I'm going to change the m, and I'm going to have like for different values of m, I'm going to get number of equations which I'm going to solve by solving that eigenvalue equation. Okay. And this ni here is, then since I don't want my system to get those divergent results, which we talked about yesterday, I can write my ith order correction in my state as, you know, combination of all the unperturbed states, excluding these states which are degenerate. Okay. And similar picture we had drawn here, if you remember. So here we had excluded a now for my degenerate, for my non-degenerate case, this N naught was a state vector, a well-defined state where my system knew it had to collapse, or maybe it had to represent when I turned off my perturbation, right? For degenerate system, since I have a degenerate C, this is a linear combination of all the, I would say, let me use L. Okay. So this L belongs to all the base of degenerate states here. Okay. When you're going to do tutorial problem tomorrow, I am sure this should be your starting point for calculating the energy correction. Okay. Probably this is going to help you. I think that's all for this part of the lecture. And if we have time, we'll definitely solve one problem related to either non-degenerate or degenerate, whatever you want to do. But I want to cover a little part related to the tutorial which has been assigned for tomorrow. Okay, is that okay? Can we stop here? Stop the discussion here for the perturbation theory and start with something interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'll take a pause maybe here if you want to have more discussions and if you want to add something, like how's life here? Like, this is your second day here, right, at Perimeter with your lectures. So how's everything going? Busy, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay, and just to inform you, I do have office hours after the class, like for 30 minutes. So if you want to discuss anything more, I'm available. But the link is going to change, and probably you're going to join using Zoom on your devices, because we have a separate link for tutorials and for office hours, okay? Also for tutorials tomorrow, you need to bring devices. I need to have at least one device per group, and you can make groups of four probably, whatever you're comfortable with, all right? One thing more regarding tutorials, the last tutorial, like the fourth one, because I'm just teaching half of this course, the half of the course Dan is going to teach. And my last tutorial is on 20th of September. And I didn't want to give you another problem set for that one. There's a research paper, which I have mentioned which one in the lecture guidelines. And probably you want to take a look. Last tutorial will be just reviewing that research paper. It's related to open quantum systems, and it's not too complicated. Like, I tried to find out the easiest one which I could understand, and it's not too difficult for you. So it's going to be a good exercise, like how to read research papers and how to compile the information from them. Okay, so maybe if you want, you can get a head start with that research paper and take a look what it's about. Although you haven't covered those topics yet in class, but it would be a nice idea to just give it a quick reading, okay? Okay. Maybe for this problem, which the next problem which we are going to do for this balls into bin problem, it would be a good exercise if you all can work on it. I'll just give you a problem, okay? And maybe you can try to give me possible solutions of that. It's just standard permutation combination problem, okay? I'll share my screen.
You said there was a research paper on open quantum systems. And where is it uploaded?
It's on the portal, and I think in the over like the first PDF on your portal for this quantum course, it's the lecture guidelines or something of that sort. I need to find out the exact name for that file where Dan and I had compiled the lecture schedule and tutorial schedule and everything. So it was the general information regarding the whole course. Do you see that? I can email it to everyone because I have the list. And by the way, you all need to check your emails. I'm not sure if you're doing that or not. Okay. But I can email the research. I cannot email the research paper because I'm not sure if I'm allowed to do that, but I can send you the link, and then using the subscription at PI, you can download that, okay?
The discussion on research article on density matrix and master equation?
Yeah. Okay. So any other questions? Okay. So I'll discuss the, I describe the question which we are going to work on. It's related to arranging balls into bins, and as a quantum physicist, I would say, whenever it comes to bin, I always talk about potential well. So we're going to talk about a three-dimensional potential well. That's the easy one. And we know the eigenvalues and eigenfunctions, so there's no perturbation in the system. And since it's a three-dimensional potential well, let's just work with a simple one, okay? It's a one-dimensional potential well, I would say. It's a potential well problem, the standard one. But in this potential well, I need to arrange three particles, okay? So there are three balls which go into this potential well. And these are distinct balls. You can identify them with their different colors. And the total energy for these three balls in this potential well would be the sum of all these three energies, right? Let's say my first ball goes into state NA, second ball goes into state NB, and third ball goes into state NC. The total energy for this system would be, like we know how to solve the potential energy problem, and these are the eigen energy values, pi square, h bar square to ma square, okay? Ma square. So you're familiar with this, right? You're familiar with this expression here. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I fix the temperature of my potential well such that the energy is, so I would say, I rather than fixing the temperature, I would say I fix the energy of my potential well as this quantity, okay? So by this, I mean that the combinations allowed for NAs and NBs and NCs are only those which satisfy this equation here, okay? Only those combinations of NA, NB, and NCs are allowed. And I would tell that what possible values of NBs and A and NCs will give me this particular energy, and then maybe you can start doing the problem. So there are three combinations which would give me this total energy. So NA could be, NA, NB, NC, first possibility could be that all three could be 9, okay? The second possibility could be that 2 of them were 3 and 1 was 5. And third could be 2 of them were in 11 and 1 in 1. And maybe if you have studied quantum statistical mechanics from Griffiths, you might be familiar with this problem, okay? It's a standard problem from Griffiths. So what I want you to do is, I want you to arrange these ends and then, okay. So maybe, this is what I want you to do. I want you to find out all possible combinations of NA and NB, and that's not my final aim. My final question is that, let's say from this potential well, I have, like, there are three balls here in this well or in this bin, and I draw one of the balls, and I want you to tell me what is the probability that I get energy E5. Does this question make any sense to you?
What is E5?
E5 is the energy, like, so if I draw a ball here and I get that ball in N state 5. So I get in this state, or this state, yeah.
Are all of the states equally probable?
Yes, yeah, that's the first assumption. Maybe I should have started with that. So all these states are equally probable. There's no biasing in the system, okay?
Does that mean that 1, 2, 3, and 4 are equally probable, or that each permutation of each of those things is equally probable?
Each of these states are equally probable. Yes, the permutation is going to depend on how many combinations, like for this particular combination, only one, for this particular configuration, there's only one combination possible, right? But for this particular configuration, there are three possible combinations allowed. So all of these states, the probability of drawing any state, it's equal, right? Like, there's no biasing in the system. I am sure if I'm understanding the question correctly.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Yeah, I think maybe I can. So one of the possible combinations is this for this particular state and for this one. So when I say the system is equally probable, is that these combinations are equally probable for the system. Okay.
So shouldn't the summage of these squares added up to 2, 4, 3? But option 2 and 4 don't seem to.
Can you repeat the question?
So we have NA equal to 3, NB equal to 3, and NC equal to 5. And the summage of the squares does not equal 2, 4, 3. Wasn't that the condition?
I think it's 3, 15.
I'm sorry, did I? Okay, it's 15. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't write it correctly. Great, thank you.
And
yeah, 15.
Option 4, I think, has the same problem.
It is 30. Yep.
Okay. And the question was answered. You said what was the probability of energy being 5, the N being 5?
Mm-hmm.
Was it answered?
Yeah. What you all to do first is just to try to find out how many possible combinations you can draw from these configurations.
So isn't it true that you have 4 options for the total configuration, and then you have 1/3 chance of drawing one of the balls, so it's so because we have just 1/5 in there, it is 1/3 times 1/4, so it is 1/12.
These are distinguishable particles, so this combination is equally probable. So for this particular configuration, so when I'm writing NA and VNB, I'm not writing the proper combinations here. I need to work out the proper combinations here. Since they are distinguishable, I would say for this particular combination, I have three possibilities, right? So 15 and 3. You can vote in groups if you're born. Yeah. I don't mind you all discussing and then finding out the probability for finding the system in N5 state.
Okay. Just to clarify, when you mean finding the system in like state, like with a quantum number 5, you mean any of the three particles in state quantum number 5?
Yeah.
So you just draw a random one. And you're like, is this ball?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I draw any of these balls, and then I find it in n is equal to 5 state.
It's like you come to set, and then out of this, you only got one ball. Okay.
Is it one of 13?
Well, it'll be. Yeah, you have listed them all. Well, it'll be.
This condition and.
Okay, so this will be if it's multiplied by one, then you can one ball and not.
It's going to have
how many rows? Oh, yeah. What? The expectation. I like this way
the number is the energy
of
no,
six over thirteen. Sorry. In 6 of them, you can pick out 5, but there's a 1/3 chance.
Yes, because
so 1/3 times 6 over 13, so it's 2. You might get 7 or 13. Is it 2 or 13?
I cannot hear it. Did you say 1/13?
Not 2/13.
2/13 for n is equal to. I just need to try find out. Like, let me check.
Yeah.
So, could you explain how you probably did that?
It was a group effort, but me and Dawit and Robin discussed it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, there is just one option for if one configuration for 999, and there are three options for 3315, three options for 11, 11, and 1, and 3 factorial or 6 for 5, 7, 13. So
yep.
It's 13 in total. In 6 configurations of those 13 configurations, we have the number 5. So, so there is a 6/13 chance that we are going to pick the correct configuration, and
yep.
there is a 1/3 chance of picking 5. So it's
yes.
perfect.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. That's the correct answer. So probability that I'm going to pick up a ball from this well or a bin and I find it in this state is 2/13. And I hope everyone was able to do that. Does anyone need me to explain? I can explain it in another way, but this is one of the correct approaches. Like out of these possible, I would call these as the configurations, okay? And these as the possible combinations of these configurations, okay? So I'm going to use different terminologies here. So for the first configuration here, we have only one possibility. And for the other two, we have 3 possible combinations. And for the last one, we have like 6 possible combinations. So one way of finding probability of any of these states would be to find out the probability of picking these configurations, like these combinations, okay? Like for in this example, since my n is equal to 5 state was in the lower half, I probability that I have picked one of these 6 combinations is 6/13, like the total 13 of these combinations. And once I have picked any one of these 6 combinations, the probability that I'm going to pick up 5 is going to be 1/3. So the total probability is going to be 2/13. So this is one of the ways of doing it. Or if you want, what I would have also probably done is I would have counted all the number of states. Like here, the total number of states are 1, 2, 3, and then 3, and then 13. So 39 possibilities, right? And in all of these 39 possibilities, I have state 5 appearing in 6 of them. So 6 by 39, I think that also gives you 2/13, right? Yeah, yeah. So that could have been one of the ways of doing it. But yeah, my way is a little too complicated. If my system is really, really big, that would be hard to find out all these options, I guess. This is a better way of doing the problem. But in our lecture tomorrow, we are not going to do either of these ways. On Friday. So we are going to find a general way of finding these energy states. And what we are going to do is we are not going to use a terminology of this kind. So we are not going to use a combination of this kind. Instead, I'm going to introduce something called something called configuration states. Like instead of talking about which states are occupied, like these NA, NBs, and NCs, they tell me which states are occupied. I'm going to talk about how many states go into a particular state. So by that, what I mean is, I'm going to calculate, instead of these NA, NB, and NCs, I'm going to talk about something called occupation numbers. Occupation number configuration, okay? And what are these occupation? So it's just another way of writing this in a different manner. And these occupation numbers, we are going to denote by Qs, and I'm going to write them as NA, N2s, N3s, and so on. These are capital Ns. And they're different from these small n's in the sense that these n's capital tell me how many particles are occupying energy state E1, how many particles are occupying or balls are occupying energy state E2 and E3 and so on. So for example, for my configuration of this kind, right? So for a configuration of this kind, when NA, NB, NC was 7, 13, and 5, in my occupation number configuration, it would have meant that there are no states with energy E1, no state with energy E2, 3, 4, 5, 6, with energy 7, I have one particle, okay? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and I'm sorry, there was one with energy 5 as well. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Okay. So this occupation number configuration here is equivalent to 7, 13, and 5. Because for statistical mechanics, I'm not interested in, I'm mostly interested in how many particles occupy a particular energy state. Okay, this is of my interest. So maybe I can give one more example. For the 999 combination or configuration, the occupation number configuration would have meant no particles in energy E1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And for EN, E9, I have 3 particles. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. So for our lecture on Friday, we are going to work mostly with this kind of configuration instead of this, which is this configuration is like more intuitive. But what ultimately we want is we want to maximize configuration because that's going to give the real distribution of particles in our box. Like we want to see how the particles are going to distribute them. Okay, so before I finish, I also want to say that in your tutorial tomorrow, you have a similar kind of problem, but that problem is for a harmonic potential well instead of this square potential well. So this was for square potential well. And you're going to do this exercise for distinguishable particles and bosons and fermions as well. Like for bosons and fermions, for bosons, these three combinations won't make any sense since the balls are of same color. So you'll have only these four possibilities. And for fermions, these three possibilities cannot happen because of Pauli's exclusion principle. Like no two state can appear in the same N, okay? So maybe you can work out with these problems tomorrow and Caroline will be there to help you all.